Today on Vox Talks, why are Africa's roads where they are? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Why do politicians and presidents build roads? Is it so that their citizens can get around, or is it primarily to make themselves richer? New research from Africa lends weight to one of these conclusions, and Stephen Pulhek of the University of Auckland and the CEPR is going to tell us which one it is. Stephen, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim, and thank you for the invitation.
You looked at countries in West Africa since 1965. Which countries did you look at, and why did you choose this period?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we looked at West Africa as a group, mostly because we think it's an interesting region to study those questions that you highlighted. So we really started with just having a casual look at the map of the region and just looking at the road network, notably the paved roads in this part of the world. And it kind of looks quite distinctly interior to coast. So there are a few roads connecting countries to each other, and most main roads are just from the interior in almost a straight line to the coast. Why does it look that way? And another interesting fact about this region is that most countries, almost all of them, export non-renewable natural resources. So think of metals and minerals. And we think that the discovery of such metals and minerals over time has something to do with the evolution of the road network. Well, another fact of this region is that it started out quite autocratic and only recently became much more democratic. And we think that autocratic leaders probably make very different choices when it comes to building roads than democratic leaders. West Africa is a region where all these patterns may be related. Now, of course, we could have done all of Africa in theory, but we ran into, you know, the limitations of data that we could collect. So for now, the focus is on West Africa.
And when you're talking about road building, what do we mean by that? What sort of roads and what sort of building?
We use Michelin maps. You know, nowadays we have devices and Google Maps and such, but in the old days you'd have a paper map. And if you could collect, could have saved those maps over time, then if you get the new issue every year, then you can compare the two and you see what changed over time. That's the type of data we used. And then these old paper maps would also give you different qualities of roads, which, you know, if you travel in the region, it matters a lot. You know, you can't travel just any road with any vehicles. So it tells you which are paved, which are improved, partially improved, earth roads, and even down to just tracks. So we really focused on the paved roads, however, because those have a clear definition. You know, they are all weather roads. You can use them year-round, and also heavy trucks can use them, but notably those that might be used in mining. So we focus on paved roads.
Now, with an eyeball test of the maps that you have in your paper, it's pretty apparent, as you said, that most of these roads go from the interior to the coast. And your best guess for why is because of this mineral extraction that's going on in the interior.
Yes, we think so. And this started already long, long time ago in colonial times, most likely. So all these countries have been colonized in the past up to about 1960. So we also started in 1965 with our analysis to say, well, you know, after the colonial period, they could start shaping their own future and making their own choices of where to build roads. But the colonial powers were the first to build, you know, the main trunk roads and railways. The fact is that West Africa was not settled to live there for colonizers, but really used to exploit for the export of natural resources. So not just non-renewable ones, but also think of plantations, for example. And to be able to export those goods back to colonizers, you'd need roads and railways that connect the interior. And probably the cheapest to build then is a straight line to the coast. So that's where it started. But we think that that pattern has been reinforced even after the end of the colonial period.
And if the road paving activity over the last 50 years had been done according to the needs of the citizens of these countries, how would the map have looked different?
Yeah, that's a very good question, but also a very, very hard question. So the follow-up questions would be, you know, what are those needs? And then also, what is optimal? And can we think of that in a sort of a structural way? If you're a trade economist, the first thing you might mention is, well, what about comparative advantage? So given that this region of the world has so many natural resources, then maybe it's a good thing to just focus your economy on those. And then you'd also need those interior to coast roads to be able to export them. That's a fair argument to make. However, if you look at the track record of countries on average that depend a lot on resources, then it seems that many of them find it very difficult to grow out of such dependence. And some of them do not even grow much in the very long time. you know, comparative advantage is not necessarily the full answer. So if you believe that regional trade opportunities may also be important, so not those between West Africa and the rest of the world, but those between countries within the region, and also domestically, you know, within countries, then maybe you need different types of roads. So more city to city, let's say, or country to country, rather than just interior to coast. Now, of course, the fact is that we do observe lots of interior to coast and relatively less of those city to city and country to country connections. Begs the question, have the needs of citizens been heard? And then we have to ask, so to what extent this is optimal or suboptimal? Well, our idea is to start with an assumption, but I think it's a reasonable one, to say that democracies probably care a lot more about those needs of citizens, while autocracies, on the other hand, probably stay more about staying in power and enriching themselves, also to make that power possible. And one sure way to enrich yourself and use the money to stay in power is to focus on the export of natural resources. Just because of expropriating those rents is probably a lot easier than extracting rents from, I don't know, income tax, for example. So we do see that autocracies are a lot more likely to connect deposits to ports than democracies are. And then that type of road building, given that it's mostly done by autocracies, may not be optimal after all, despite the comparative advantage argument.
But we can look at the maps and we can guess that what you're assuming here is the correct story, but we're economists, so we need data. And what sort of data can capture the type of road construction that's going on so that we can do this analysis?
Yeah, that's right. So some of the data we use is quite well known. So the PolityIV database to track autocracies and democracies, for example, been used recently also to argue that democracy does cause growth, for example. So that's well known. But then newer parts of our data set is the discoveries that are made in particular locations. So we need a latitude and longitude of each discovery and then when it was discovered and what type of mineral was discovered, etc. But then also the roadmaps. That was quite a bit of work because all those paper maps that we got access to, they needed to be digitized. You know, you can have a picture on your screen and then try to draw it with a digital line, etc. So that was a lot of work. But we did get some financial support from the International Growth Center for that, luckily. And then we needed quite good quality also, so that we do some network analysis, so that you exactly know which point on the map is connected to which other point on the map and what would be the distance along roads and then travel time and such. We could have gone into the grid, you know, just slice up the country in squares and then say, well, is there a paved road in that square or not? We thought that that would be too coarse because it might miss that there's a river, you know, between two grids and then maybe no bridge. So we wanted to get the highest quality possible. And hopefully that's useful for other applications and other researchers as well.
These autocratic elites that you refer to are often defined along ethnic lines. You make this point in the paper. So do we have any evidence from your data that this is reflected in the pattern of road building?
Well, yes, indeed. So in many West African countries, ethnicity plays a role in politics, but that happens both in democracies and in autocracies. And we're not the first to really look at that. There are several recent papers that find that leaders tend to favor their own ethnicity. So they identify with a particular ethnicity, presumably because that's their main source of power. But in Africa, that also often means favoring your ethnic geographic homeland. So ethnicity is also tied to geographical location or area. And by looking at that, we do indeed find that leaders tend to connect deposits that are discovered in their own ethnic homeland first. So that's another piece of evidence that there is indeed ethnic favoritism going on, but also that it's not random where roads are built, that it's really this deposits to ports are connected by autocracies, and then more so if deposits are discovered in ethnic homelands.
I mean, it's a big question, Stephen, but is it possible at all to estimate how big a misallocation of resources this has been?
Yeah, it's always very hard to put a value number on things, and especially in this one. So what we can say, however, is that, well, think of the average autocratic country, and maybe you should think of the average autocratic country as, you know, one of these countries in that region in the 70s and 80s when most of them were autocratic. Let's say they become a democracy, which again, many have become democracies from the 1990s. Well, then when they become democratic, then their road network will start to change. That's on the face value of what we argue. So it's like changing the road network of Ghana to a network that looks much more like Senegal's, where in Senegal, many paved roads connect towns and cities rather than mostly mines. But in Ghana, most of the paved roads do connect deposits to the coast. So if democracy can start changing the road network, then hopefully that's a good thing because it would create more domestic and regional connections, lower trade costs, and hopefully be beneficial for the wider non-resource economy.
Now, a lot of the infrastructure projects in the developing world are externally funded, and they're funded by multilateral institutions, the ones we all know. Have the policymakers within these institutions, these banks, been asleep at the wheel when they've been looking at this? Because they could have a lot of influence over which roads get paved and which direction they go.
We didn't look at this in detail, so I can't make very firm conclusions, but I can speculate a little. But first, it's important to say that the region is democratic nowadays, so hopefully that leads to better policy outcomes.
Yes.
By themselves. But the help from multilateral institutions may still be good. So, for example, the African Development Bank, one of those institutions, has been advocating a major expansion of Africa's transport infrastructure, but notably the type of infrastructure that is more long distance and connects countries within Africa. But that, of course, will require a lot of cooperation between countries. Now, on the other hand, going back to that comparative advantage argument, exporting natural resources and focusing investment on that sector of the economy need not be bad per se. However, it has been proven to be very difficult to manage resource wealth responsibly, such as reinvesting those rents back into education, healthcare, and maybe other general purpose infrastructure and other drivers of growth. So some outside help and the reorientation of infrastructure may help to get those other sectors going as well, and that would be a good thing.
If you travel in Africa at the moment, you cannot help but notice how Chinese investment is used to create infrastructure. And in some countries, that's been done on a massive scale. So if this is a big historical problem, is this investment now correcting that problem?
Yeah, that's a popular question to raise. Again, very hard to establish in the causal sense, but we did look at an earlier paper at some data on Chinese projects more in detail. And it's true that China has been funding projects that essentially reinforce the existing interior-to-coast links, often in the cooperation with less democratic governments. Mm-hmm. So our results would suggest that if those are autocracies mostly, just reinforcing interior-to-coast links, that's not optimal. That you're just reinforcing the old patterns and maybe just focusing on this resource sector. We looked at like 40 big projects, those that with budgets over $100 million. So out of those 40, 39 of them are connected interior to coast, while only one of those projects connected two countries, and those were both landlocked, Rwanda and Burundi. So of course, this is only suggestive, but hopefully democracies will make choices that prioritize roads that reflect the needs of citizens instead.
Oh, we must hope so. Stephen, thank you very much, first of all, for putting all the effort in to create the data set that makes this possible, and we'll make lots more research in this direction possible in the future. But thanks also for coming on and talking about it today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
If you want to read more about this, the paper is called Priority Roads, the Political Economy of Africa's Interior to Coast Roads. And the authors are Roberto Bonfatti, Wangu, and Stephen Pulhecker. It is discussion paper 15354 at the CEPR. This has been a Vox Talk from the Center for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the most innovative economic research every week, so subscribe to Vox Talks and then you don't miss an episode. And remember, if you have missed an episode, there's 10 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.